So anytime there's something out there, just think of it this way. There's air blowing in your britches somewhere. If you're missing.
You're listening to the Help Me With HIPAA podcast, where HIPAA and humor collide to make learning fun. Your delightful hosts are Donna Grindle and David Sims. Relax. HIPAA help is on the way.
Welcome to episode 353 of the Help Me With HIPAA podcast. My name is David Sims of HIPAA for MSPs, and joining me is Donna Grindle of Cardin. So Donna, how was it?
Well, you know, it was done properly to my standards.
So you survived another birthday.
Yep, so far anyway. I got a couple other things I'm still doing. But, you know, the two big back-to-back parties reiterated my age. But it's only a physical age. Mentally, I could still hang with it, you know. No, all of my friends are gray now, except for me. Have fun with that.
I'm sure you did.
Yeah, I have fun with it with you.
I know.
Look, it's the one thing I got. It's it. The eyesight's gone. Everything's gone. But for some reason, the only blessing I have is it takes a while for me to turn gray.
Yeah. Well, contrary to our new podcast artwork, I am not fully gray.
Elizabeth. You don't look fully gray on there. You got rid of the fully gray one. Because you did that, you did the white-headed one first, and I'm like, wow, you're just going full on out white-headed.
I don't know if any of you have ever tried to like create your own avatar. You never find the exact right way to make yourself look.
So you can check out our new logo for the podcast. We're trying to do an update in honor of 7 years.
Yeah, we spit shining this boy.
There is a difference in the age, though. 7 years is a long time.
I know.
You know, 7 years in computers, you know, they always talk about dog years.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think people understand that computers operate in dog years.
Yeah.
Maybe instead of 7, let's say it's 5. So if you got a 3-year-old computer, you need to think that it's, you know, a 15-year-old dog.
Mm-hmm. I just had somebody the other day tell me something similar to that. They were like, we had somebody say we need to replace our computers, but they're only like 5 years old. And I was like, only 5 years old. Okay.
Well, even if you just said that computer years were 3 years.
Yeah.
You know, 1 to 3.
Yep. Yeah.
Your computer should not be teenagers. That's the answer.
Well, you probably recall back in the 386, 486 days where the computer literally could not last you more than 3 years because the software was outpacing the hardware.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you couldn't get that much use out of a computer. You had to constantly update or purchase new computers fairly frequently. And then, you know, when things kind of finally mellowed out, and now software doesn't really push the hardware much anymore, unless you're a gamer. Now it's not quite as necessary to update as quickly. So now you can get, you know, 3 to 5 years out of one, depending on other things.
Well, you know, we still say 3 years, you should be planning on replacing it.
Mm-hmm.
You can bring in another one to replace that for a high-end user and then let, you know, a less demanding user have it for 2 years. That's the way you should cycle through your systems. That's just my opinion, though.
But either way, there should be a plan, right?
Yeah. You need a plan. Just like I have a plan. When my sister sang, left me a voicemail singing me happy birthday, and she said, edit it all the way. And then at the very end, for your last one in your 50s. And I'm like, number one, bonus points for pulling that one out. That was really good. Number two. And, you know, we know what I just said.
Yeah.
So, Yep. Well, we'll do my big one next year. We'll see how long it's going to last.
Yeah, we may have to do like a live feed on that one.
Look, there's a reason that me and all of my friends are thankful there is no documentation of my youth like yeah. there is of people today. And there's no reason to start at 60.
Well, you know, one of the good things about getting older is that the people who have the dirt on you are less and less the older you get.
Actually, though, it's when you're with everybody and there are things you remember and they're completely different things they remember and you trigger each other and it's like, oh my God, I totally forgot about that.
Oh, yeah. I went and did this crime scene investigation thing that is going around now where you have to go solve these crimes. It's all done on your app on your phone, but you got to walk around to all these locations. And when you're walking, stuff pops up on the app to tell you clues about the thing, and you have to solve who did it. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, so I was doing that 2 weekends ago. Had my best friend and his wife, and we've been best friends since junior high school or whatever. So somehow along the way, we're on the way home, and he tells this story about something I did back when I was a teenager, completely forgot all about it. And it's kind of one of those things where you want to forget about.
But you didn't lie. It was like you had blocked it.
Yeah.
It was true.
And I just started laughing. And Lori's like, you never told me this. I said, I never thought about it. I never even remembered it at all. But when he brought it up, I was like, oh my God, I did do that. So, anyway, yeah, I'm looking forward to him getting Alzheimer's. He knows too much. All right. So speaking of things that could be tricky, there are three things we're going to talk about today, which are tricky places that HIPAA has applied. And you might not think of those things.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people, I don't think a lot of people realize how far things go out. So I had a couple of things that all came up just as examples of that. Thought we'd throw them in here and have a little bit of fun.
Sounds like fun, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
So before we do, I want to remind everybody the Privacy and Security Bootcamp is at privacybootcamp.com. Looking forward to this 3.5-day in-person event, Louisville, Kentucky. It's going to be amazing.
So yeah, if you think it's fun, just listen to the podcast. You got to come do the 3.5 days with us in Kentucky because that'll be really fun.
Yeah, yeah. We'll have some stories. There'll be a lot of people there that I can't wait to, you know, you don't remember what we did.
I know, right? You know, but this is bigger and better than we've ever done before. It's a supersized version of the boot camp. So go check out all the details. More information continues to be added to the website. And we're getting very excited about what we're putting together. So check out
PriceTechBootcamp.com. All right. So the 405D tip of the week. What you got for us?
So we started doing our 10 best practices to hit on those. So number 2 this week, we're going to try at least for a little while to see if we can avoid jumping around, but y'all know who you're dealing with. Number 2 is endpoint protections. So first, what are endpoints, David?
It's the point at the end. Yeah, so your endpoints would be things like your computers and your servers and your laptops and your mobile devices and any other connected hardware, printers,
your medical devices.
Yeah, medical devices.
You know, your Alexa, that's an endpoint.
Yep.
You know, so whatever you're using, if it's connecting to your network or your data, because a lot of times it's like, well, that never connects to our network because everything's in the cloud. It's still an endpoint you got to worry about because it's connecting to your cloud.
Yep.
I'm just saying, don't go off the deep end with, we only have to worry about the things in the office. That'll be wrong.
Yeah.
So here are the recommendations for the best practices for endpoint protection for small organizations. Mm-hmm. But I'll do them. You do the big ones.
All right.
Yeah, they got a lot more words to say.
That's right. You can't read as much as you used to.
No. No, I'm kind of slow today.
I got you, Granny. I got you.
Yeah, that's right. My voice is not quite right. I, you know, a lot of things took a beating this weekend, but I had a great time. All right. So remove administrative accounts, as most users in an organization do not need to be authorized as system administrators. So removing this access can mitigate potential damage caused by an attacker who compromises that endpoint and becomes an administrator.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, it's easier, but rule number two, security is not optional, really is. Impacted by rule number one, security is not convenient.
Yep.
So don't skip it just because it's not convenient.
Yeah. And there was a day and time when that's how IT functioned, which is, look, we just need to get everything up and running and working. So just connect everything, share access to everyone on everything. Look, it's all working.
Share the C drive.
Yeah.
And when you called and said, there's a software company that wants me to just share the C drive.
Yeah. Just share the whole thing out. I know. I said, how do you get this software installed and or to function without being an administrator? And they were like, yeah, you don't.
Doesn't happen.
Okay, well, how do I share it out to everybody else who's not administrators? Just share it to everybody. Share the whole C drive.
No.
I was like, oh, gosh.
Yes. He's really happy, folks, when that happens. Okay, so recommendation for small practices, number two, patch.
Mm-hmm.
Patch some more. Each patch, just think of it, when you're sewing on that patch, that's some private space that somebody ain't gonna get to see through a hole in your jeans.
Yep, put a patch or a zipper on it and one.
That's right. So anytime there's something out there, just think of it this way. There's air blowing in your britches somewhere if you're missing a patch. The final thing is basic endpoint protections. You know, the things where you used to say, I've got an antivirus, that's good. Not enough anymore. That's just one of the things. Full disk encryption. Of course, the patching we already talked about. Each endpoint has to have controls that are assigned to it that are reasonable and appropriate for your environment.
Yep.
But the rule is now just let it update. Just let it update.
Mm-hmm.
It's just too confusing.
The biggest challenge we have with patching is that most people don't realize that there's not enough things being patched.
Right.
There's so many other programs on the computer that are not being patched, and automatic patching software doesn't look at it. And, you know, you always know when you run a program like, oh, I've not used this program in a long time. And you go to run it and it says update available. And you're like, oh.
Uh-oh. I know. It's like I get so mad when it's like, oh, I've got an open Edge. I never use it, but we keep it on here because you never know when you might need to test it.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't owned it forever. So I still believe Microsoft should be updating all of their software.
Yep.
When you do it, you don't have to redo it. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, we won't get into the other control about this, but there is vulnerability management we'll talk about later down the road.
Yeah.
That covers, you know, the gap, the gaping hole that this causes, it covers. All right. So for medium and large organizations, it looks like this. Automate the provisioning of endpoints. When using value-added resellers or VARs, ensure they pre-configure endpoints before delivering them to your enterprise. So have your stuff set up properly before it's plugged into your environment. Number two, use mobile device management technologies. And this is one of the banes of my existence. But MDM technologies manage the configuration of devices connected to the MDM system. So, yeah, figure out. Now, I would say this, too. Even if you're small, you've got to figure out how to deal with mobile devices. If you don't have a mobile device management platform, that you still have probably need to figure out a way to manage that stuff.
Yeah, the mobile device management can be done without the technology.
Yeah.
Or you can use the technology, but either way, you really should be keeping up with it and considering it an endpoint that needs to be protected.
Yes, vital true. And last one, implement endpoint detection and response technologies. These technologies allow cybersecurity departments to query large fleets of endpoints for suspicious activity. And I would even say that nowadays, this is down to the small organizational level as far as the capability and the price point. Used to, small organizations could not afford that type of software and tools, but now it's almost standard for even small businesses.
Well, it depends on how complex. But yes, there are versions. I'll mm-hmm. give you that.
Yeah. So, all right. And this just goes to say that you should be looking at doing more than what you have to do. And we've often say that HIPAA is the minimum, and this is not HIPAA. We're talking about 4 or 5D, but still, you can do more. Don't stop yourself and go, oh, well, it only says I have to do this, so that's all I'm doing. No.
Do as what's Donna said, reasonable and appropriate.
Yep, as Donna said, reasonable and appropriate. Stop being yes. inappropriate and unreasonable.
That's how you start your meeting when you're given the, you know, powers that be. I have a proposition. I'm proposing we do endpoint security because we need to stop being unreasonable and inappropriate. Unreasonable and inappropriate.
Yep.
Let's see where that gets you, because you're just being inappropriate.
Yeah.
All right. So you ready now for the...
I am ready. Let's get into these three tricky places that HIPAA has applied.
So the segment for our normal, the whole rest of it is the HIPAA...
Say what?
Segment. There you go. What? What? That was good. I gave you time to find the button and everything.
I know. I'm on it.
Okay, so here's the thing that, and I don't know how often you still run into this. I know that plenty of people will tell you HIPAA doesn't apply to us because we don't have access to the EHR.
Yeah.
You know, you have complete access to something that is considered PHI. It's over. It's done. Mm-hmm. So this is a confusing situation. I wanted to bring it up because it's a confusing situation. I still haven't gotten completely resolved, but we've been down the path long enough where I'm like, I need to just bring this up so that people start thinking about it because it's only going to get more complicated. So this is, we have a client that wants to hire a company that's as a call center. And the call center uses this VoIP application to record voicemails and do all of their stuff. So it's, you know, a big bundle that includes a call center and your phone stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they have all the VoIP applications, and we've talked about VoIP, boy, probably about 7 years ago, we had a discussion about VoIP. But voice over IP... Where all the phones now, really, I mean, most of the phones we deal with, back then, it was like a new cutting edge thing. But today, most business phones run on voice over IP / cellular networks, not on the old analog backbone anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So the call center people use the VoIP service. And so we're asking, so our people send the BAA a questionnaire, and they send it to the VoIP people because that's where all their data is, right? So the VoIP people are a little unsure. And this is where things started getting a little crazy. Now, good, it's one of our clients that follows the rules. No one gets a contract until they're approved. So they're vetted first, thankfully, because here's the rabbit hole we went down. So they send the due diligence questionnaire to the call center people who are like, we don't know these answers. That's handled by the VoIP people. So they send it on to the VoIP people, who our client doesn't even know the VoIP people, because it's not even, you know, It's a down that supply chain thing. So the answers they get back, quite interesting, and I plucked a few. There are some more that made me go, we're going to try this again. And, you know, does your company understand you're eligible for a HIPAA audit as a business associate and subject to HIPAA, civil and criminal penalty, blah, but, you know, that you could be investigated and have issues in the same manner as a covered entity, right? Their answer was partial. Does your company understand you're a partial? We partially understand. And I was like,
Yeah, their answer should have been, we don't know what we don't know.
And then it was, have you assigned a HIPAA privacy or security officer? No. Okay.
You should have put partially.
I know. We partially have one. Do you have a written breach incident response plan? Yes. So remember that. Yes, we do. That's good. They're a VoIP company. They should. But let's move on. So if I have an incident response plan that's done properly using industry standards, what would that also lead me to believe if I was following industry standards? We would do a risk analysis. Because the risk analysis is not a HIPAA thing. It's a risk management standard.
Right.
So when was your most recent complete SRA performed? Not applicable. Okay. All right. Have you developed an associated mitigation plan for your last risk analysis? Yes.
We've never done one, but we have results of one.
And we have a plan, and we have an incident response plan. See, I'm getting that they don't understand managing standards of, you know, security risk management and those kind of things. These are industry standards. These are not HIPAA things. So, but then we ask about HIPAA, and we say, when did you last complete an audit of your written HIPAA policies and procedures? Now, we wouldn't have asked them that, you know, if they had said they had none, but they have written policies and procedures. Okay, when did you last audit your written policy? Never. Do you have a formal HIPAA training plan for your entire workforce, including new hires? No. Why has your entire workforce not had training? So here we go. As a communication service provider, none of our clients' data or that of their patients touches our network, and we don't touch their network to the extent that patient data could be accessed. Call recordings that contain PHI would be stored on our network as they are stored on the PBX.
All right, well, there you go.
So right there, you can't say it doesn't touch our network, but the call recordings containing the PHI would be stored on our network. Right there, you got two opposing sentences. Now, again, my guess is no one truly understands this stuff, right? Does your organization store any of our ePHI on your devices, on any devices at any time in any format? Partial.
After they just said they did.
Right, but it's partial. We only store it part of the time. At any rate, the minute you answer partial on any of your devices at any time in any format, now we're going to start talking about how do you think HIPAA partially applies to you? Why are you not meeting all of these things? So then it's like, well, do you have a business associate agreement in place with any of the vendors that store or maintain these devices where PA not applicable? Do you understand? Now, remember, they have an incident response. Do you understand that the BAA would require time limits for reporting security incidents and breaches of PHI? Not applicable. So, you know, I mean, these are just a few of the answers. But when I went from we have never done an SRA, but we have a risk management plan and we have an incident response plan. And we do actually store your PHI. I know it's not, it is truly, they clearly do not understand
Yeah.
what's going on.
Yeah. At least right? they're At least their answers were honest.
Yeah. So I'm kind of like, okay, could you go back to them and throw this a few questions at them again? Because I'm trying to understand the situation. And their response, these questions are being reviewed by our executive committee, and they are taking a long-term view to this issue to see what policy and procedure changes we should or might consider.
Uh-huh.
Everybody stop. You know, our executive committee is trying to figure out how we can make the argument the HIPAA doesn't apply. But if you take anybody and you're following those questions, once you get to the one that says, yes, PHI is stored in the PBX on our cloud, whoa. Everything else changes. So assuming that vendors have it covered. So if you've got this call center, and again, I haven't gone down the deep dive with the call center yet. If you've got the call center and the call center does healthcare, because I probably wouldn't be talking to them if they don't. The call center does healthcare, and then they use a vendor. Well, if they're going to sign a BAA, the call center, and then they send this, do they not have a BAA with their VoIP provider? Because clearly the VoIP provider doesn't think that they need to do it. Is it one of those cases where they signed it and said, it's just paperwork? I don't know. But the bottom line here is two things to note. One, when you've got VoIP involved, somebody needs to be asking these questions. Because if the data is being stored in the cloud at the VoIP provider for patient voicemails, and again, this is for a call center who will handle patient phone calls. So the intent is to get the messages from the patients. Mm-hmm. So right there, somebody needs to be asking those questions. Where is the data stored? How is it being locked down? And by the way, you know, I had them send them the cloud vendor discussion about, could you just tell me how you believe you don't fit here? But don't assume that your vendors have it covered either.
Yeah.
So never, I'm sorry.
Yeah. No matter how big they are either.
No. And you know, we've talked about this repeatedly. The supply chain is becoming a bigger and bigger problem. And the more people ask about it, the more they learn how big the problem is.
Yep.
So, anything to add on that one, Mr. Sims?
No, I think that was interesting.
Can you imagine me reading it when I'm like, no, you're partially HIPAA applies? First of all, no privacy or security officer. Okay, but we have an incident response plan. Great. Never done an SRA because it's not applicable, but we have a mitigation plan for it. We haven't done it. And it's just like everything was contradicting. And it was truly, you know, they weren't making stuff up. We both have seen the ones where they're making stuff up, or I've had the ones where the answers are in all caps about how these questions are proprietary and they shouldn't have to answer them, which only makes me more concerned.
Yeah. That's like the person saying, I went swimming and got partially wet.
Yeah. And I will borrow your towel, but I will not get it wet. Don't worry. Yeah.
It's partially dry.
Yeah. I will return it partially dry. It will not be wet. Okay, so there is item number one, the assume, and we both know what assume is.
Yep.
All right. Now, number two is a juicy little story, and we always enjoy some juicy little story. When committing healthcare fraud is involved, when somebody's committing, someone somewhere is usually violating HIPAA.
Yeah, you think so.
Yeah. So if you find where it seems there's a fraudulent thing going on, and it's your patients that seem to be involved, expect that you're going to find somebody violating HIPAA.
Okay.
And this story was a convoluted one to get down to all the, and I'm sure there's some HIPAA stuff involved along the way, but the last person in this long chain of fraud conspiracy group. It was just like, that is like the stupidest of all the other people. You're the dumbest one in the criminal conspiracy. I just don't. Okay, so you got two Florida residents, Nathan and Talia. They sold Medicare patient personal medical records to another guy named Juan. Now, okay. I tried to do this without the names. I had to go back and put them in because I couldn't keep up. So then they're selling the information. And there's a lot of, we'll get to that in just a second. But the general part is Juan then used that information to file false claims. And he collected like $109 million from Medicare on those false claims. And then paid Nathan and Talia, each of them, $1.6 million over the engagement of their, whatever you want to call their criminal gang. So they're making, you know, $109 million. He's got some costs in there. $1.6 million he's giving back to Nathan and Talia. They get busted. So they got the patient information by working with foreign call centers to call Medicare patients, offering them one of these DME gadgets, you know, what it would make your knee better, your back. You know, at little or no cost. How many times do you hear that?
Yeah.
On the Medicare thing. At little or no cost. Well, this is one of those call centers. So technically, they're in that gray area of whether HIPAA applies or not.
Mm-hmm.
Because the patients are calling them for at no cost to me stuff, or they're calling out. But guess what? Remember that foreign call center thing and how we tell people that when you bring somebody in that's, you know, outsourcing offshore, you've got to worry about things about when does HIPAA apply, when does it not apply? And if you don't have that nailed down in the contract, outside of the U.S. borders, that's a U.S. law. It doesn't apply anywhere else in the world. So that little or no cost was costing Medicare a boatload of money because they would just steal the information they were getting from these patients. So you got Nathan and Talia getting the information from the call centers, giving it to Juan, who's filing the claims. But Juan is a smart dude, and he works with Nathan to make sure that the claims they file will get paid. They wanted to check the Medicare eligibility so they didn't start sending in a whole bunch that got rejected, which would send people looking after.
Okay.
So they decided that they were going to contact somebody somewhere new, Stephanie Hirsch of Los Angeles, California. So Nathan and Juan brought her in because they wanted to use her to check eligibility.
Okay.
So what they did, Ms. Thang owned L Medical, Inc., a Medicare-enrolled wheelchair and scooter repair company that qualified for, you know, access to the clearinghouse to do the eligibility checks.
Okay.
So you get charged, you know, 3 cents or whatnot. You do the eligibility check. It gives you all the deets. So then you know you're filing an active patient with coverage. So Nathan and Juan accessed the clearinghouse, logged in. She gave them a login to her account, and she would charge them a quarter for every patient they checked. So Nathan is accessing the data of more than 350,000 patients with her login, and Juan hit another 150,000 with his login. Now we got some HIPAA-related stuff going on. Because she, Miss Stephanie, was not allowed to give that information out.
At a quarter per patient.
At a quarter per patient, right? So she doesn't make hardly anything compared to the 1.6 million the other people were. A quarter per patient, you know, I don't know. It wasn't a lot of money. So Everybody else is going down for a lot of other things, you know, fraud and millions of dollars and all of this. But she ends up pleading guilty to hippie. She ends up pleading guilty to HIPAA violations, sentenced to 3 years probation and a $2,500 fine. Huh. So at a quarter of pop, she still made out better than the $2,500.
Yeah. She brought in, a little over 100,000?
Right. But, you know, she's definitely going to go through those funds with lawyers. And I don't think her business is probably doing well after this. You know, I'm pretty sure she's had to sell it and may not have a login to that clearinghouse anymore. So just know, if your staff has access to these kind of tools, they may know a one in Nathan. Who says, I wish we could verify these patients. And they're like, hey, put me in on the cut a quarter a pop, and I'll let you log in as me.
I know no one. I see no one.
I do not know one. So keep in mind, your staff that has access to this stuff that can either get the information and give it to Nathan and Juan, like Nathan and Talia, or allow them to look up the patients to confirm that, look, they knew the patients. She didn't give them the patient information. She just let them look up the patients on the Medicare site. Anyway, so there you go. If there's some fraud going on, keep looking. Because somebody somewhere.
She didn't give them any information. She just allowed them to access it.
That's right. That's right. She, you know, I'm sure there was this argument that, no, I did not reveal any patient information to them. They already had it. Yep. Oh, okay. So they're violating HIPAA, but it's not on you.
I'm like, they hacked me, and the ransomware payment was a quarter of patients.
You know, but of the big picture, you know, she was making paltry funds compared to everybody else. And She's at least only caught up in the HIPAA violation part so far. I think they kind of forego. She must have testified or something. It didn't say that they were getting her on the fraud part or being part of the, you know, whatever that is that they call them, RICO. Yeah. Or, you know, I don't know if that's
I'm surprised anyway. They didn't throw DOJ at her.
Well, DOJ is involved in the whole Medicare fraud thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole thing is DOJ.
Okay.
The Department of Justice is the link that I have there. So it all came from the Department of Justice, and they were bargaining, I'm sure, with everybody. But you can read all the details about it. It took me 3 or 4 rounds through it where I'm like... And I'd done this a while back, and then they reminded me of it at the HIPAA Summit, because at the time, I was like, I am not going to try to explain that. But DME, durable medical equipment, is often used for Medicare fraud. Mm-hmm. So keep that in mind, people. So you ready for number 3 of the 3 tricky places HIPAA applied?
Let's do it.
Okay, you remember recently we talked about the importance of website security?
We did. I do remember.
Yeah, yeah. And that everybody's like, well, I don't have PHI there.
Yeah.
And then you start asking a lot of questions, and maybe they do have PHI there. And we also talked about website cookies and how those could get caught up in HIPAA violations. We covered all that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's why we would, this is an example. So it's a massive class action settlement with all Massachusetts and some U.S. residents who received medical care at what is now Mass General Brigham in Massachusetts, and they visited any of these websites. So if you were a patient from May 2016 to July 2021, a long period of time, mm-hmm. and you were a patient and you went to any of their websites, then you fell under this, and I think they're giving everybody $100.
Oh, but, wow.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot for a class action.
I know. Yeah. Usually it's like 24 cents.
Yeah.
Just about enough to buy a record access.
Not to look up eligibility for filing my fraudulent claim.
Yep.
There you go. But at any rate, this whole case was all about the website using cookies, pixels, the website analytics, and, quote, associated technologies on several websites without first obtaining the consent of the website visitor.
Oh.
So there was all this stuff that was going on. The healthcare system, they just insist they didn't do anything wrong. No PHI was exposed. Got to figure this thing will bounce around on that question within HHS and OCR. This case, though, rather than continuing on, they settled for $18.4 million to make the class action go away. Yeah. So they settled and admitted no wrongdoing, and that's a whole nother debate. I wasn't going down that path, but it was a reiteration. And you know, there was a case in the past, and I didn't find it. Let's be honest. I didn't go look for it. But I remember that it was a case where if you went to this website for cancer treatment, you would go to their website for cancer information, and then the next thing you know, your Facebook feed starts showing you cancer ads. And the only cancer place, I didn't put it on Facebook. I didn't share it on Facebook. Why am I getting ads for it? And it got tracked back to going to this healthcare website. So the pixels were shared.
This is what can happen when you get marketing people involved and you give them access to all this stuff and they don't understand what it is that you do or how they get involved or PHI and HIPAA and all these other things. They just, look, I'm going to track pixels and I'm going to put cookie tracking and Google Analytics on your site. And I'm going to do all this stuff and we're going to do Google ads and Facebook ads and all this stuff. That's what they're there for to do. But that doesn't mean you can do them just because they can be done.
Yeah. Well, I've met some of these reputation people, will manage your social media reputation. And I start asking them some questions and I'm not impressed with their reputation because they have this attitude about, we've got it covered. Anytime somebody tells you, we've got the privacy and HIPAA thing covered, we don't worry about it, we've got it covered, tells me they don't have it covered.
No,
you should be worried about it every day.
Yeah. Even if you, quote unquote, have it covered, you should be worried about it.
Indeed. That is the thing that drives me the most nuts. It comes second only to, we are HIPAA compliant sticker on our website and all of our details. Oh, by the way, that first case, no, maybe it wasn't that one. No, they had a whole thing. No, it was another thing I was looking at. There's a whole nother thing I was looking at. I'm vetting all of these vendors, helping with it. Whole nother thing I'm looking at that says HIPAA doesn't apply to us in their white paper. HIPAA doesn't really apply to us, but we're HIPAA compliant.
Just in case.
Yeah, and I'm like, again, these do not go together. You can't be HIPAA compliant if HIPAA doesn't apply to you. You can't be HIPAA compliant even when it is.
Yeah, that whole seal of compliance, he drives me crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Those are going to go away. The FTC's going to make sure of that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, there's going to be some rude awakenings happening in the next year or two.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see.
All right, folks. That is our show for today. Thanks for listening. Be sure to share us out and follow us on your favorite social media site and rate us in our podcasting app. You can even track our cookies. Just don't toss your cookies. All right. Join us next week when we have another amazing episode. Remember, for Donna and myself, HIPAA is not about compliance. It's about patient care.
You've been listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, hosted by Donna Grendel and David Sims. The show created to help you with HIPAA. For more information or to ask us a question, visit our website at helpmewithhipaa.com. Neither Donna Grendel or David Sims are attorneys, and they do not offer binding legal advice concerning regulatory compliance. The information in this podcast should not be relied upon or construed as legal advice in any way. Consult your attorney for legal advice concerning compliance with HIPAA regulations.